Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe. Okay.
Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
So, Hunter Brown, feeling good? Positive things? The future is bright for the Astros. Next year, a young core of Jeremy Peña, Yordan Alvarez, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti. The Astros will be back in 2025, Paul. Come on. Find the good things in life.
No.
No? You like the bad things?
He pitched well and they lost. Great. Yeah. He pitched well against the lineup that, honestly, has been underachieving this year. The Mariners' pitching is good enough where if they had a better lineup, I mean, this actually might be a team with a respectable first-place record. But, look, I'm not saying what Hunter Brown did last night is unimpressive. It was, and he's clearly made a lot of progress over the course of this month because he was so, so bad in April. But I can't feel positive about this when you blow it, when you spoil an outing like that by Hunter Brown. This team was in the ALCS last year and won the World Series 2 years ago.
Yeah, I hear you. It's because last night's game encapsulates the entire season. We talked about this at the start of the show that it is rinse and repeat every single game. Something goes wrong dramatically with this team, and I think going back to the blame game. We put Presley at the top of that list. Where do you put second? Like, who's, like, when you have your pie chart, Presley fills up most of it. Where do you look at next?
God. No, I'm kidding. The baseball gods. No,
they do seem to not like the Astros right now.
I suppose if I have to pick anybody, it's the lineup as a whole.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the entire lineup scored 2 runs. And, I mean, you take a look at everybody. They only had in this game 5 hits. 2 were by Yordan, and 2 were by Bregman, who had the home run and got your 2 runs. Everyone other than Altuve, Alvarez, and Bregman was 0-for. Kyle Tucker was 0-for-3. Jeremy Peña, another 0-for-4 performance, at least less strikeouts this time around. And Jake Myers cooled off a little bit, 0-for-4. Look, Luis Castillo's a good pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But your lineup should not, when it gets to the Mariners' bullpen, and ultimately it's Ryan Stanek who's easily shutting you down. It shouldn't be that easy, right?
Nobody was really that upset he left, to be honest.
Ryan Stanek?
Yeah.
I agree. That's what I mean. Ryan Stanek's the one shutting you down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a guy that you let walk, and you're like, yeah, I mean, we didn't even use him in the postseason. So,
Yeah, it's the only part of I bring up the Hunter Brown thing just because it's been such a focal point of the struggles of this team, and now with Javier and Urquidy likely to miss time. Urquidy, based on the Dana Brown quote today, which if you missed it, he was asked about Jose Urquidy and Javier's injuries, and he said he was really worried about Urquidy, which is just sounds awful. But if you look at Hunter Brown's last 5 starts, he's given up 2 earned runs or less in 4 of them. He's gone at least 5 innings and 4 of them. So it does look like Hunter Brown is starting to figure out again. Now, I don't view him anymore and will no longer view him as this prospect that they once tried to talk about him. That he is just going to be this Cy Young candidate level next Justin Verlander guy. That Hunter Brown to me is gone. This looks like a guy who can be the third, fourth best pitcher in your rotation once again. So I'm trying to find the positives right now, Paul, through the Astros season, because there's not a lot again. They took the fun out of baseball. All the fun's gone.
There was fun?
I think so.
There's fun when they win. They're not winning.
Baseball is
boring, slow, and plodding sport.
I agree with you. Baseball is a hard, much, much more challenging sport to be entertained by. Because at least with the NFL, there's so many other games going on that you can kind of flip away. And even then, most of the time, an NFL team is relatively competitive.
You have fantasy football. You have all sorts of other things to focus on over the course of a year. You have daily fantasy football. You have gambling. And it's not like there's nothing on that front in baseball. But yeah, when the team stinks, I mean, this is a city that completely ignored the Astros from 2011 to 2015. Completely ignored them. They moved to the American League and people were like, eh.
How far are we away from that?
Pretty far. But I mean, the problem is that when this team plays poorly, collective interest wanes, and going to a ball game would be fun if things weren't as jacked up as they are because of how good the team has been over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Going to a baseball game is fun.
Yeah.
But is it the actual baseball going to a game experience is generally not actually about watching baseball, if that makes any sense. Of course, you're watching the game and stuff, and you might have a couple of cool things happen along the way, but
it's a cool hangout. It's not exactly like you're living and dying on every pitch.
Yeah. Even when they're good, regular season baseball is not. Because the Astros were almost like, we're like too good at one point.
That's what I was thinking, is that normally it's the 180. It's they're just so good, it's not interesting.
Yeah.
And now it's interesting, but they're also not that good.
Yeah, the Astros conversation is to me fascinating, just how much it's changed so quickly, because it really was.
And you won, so you have different expectations.
But you're like, they've won 6 of their last 7 games. Like, okay, great. They're beating meaningless teams. Like, the only thing that matters is the postseason.
And then anytime they did lose, it was like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
They lost 1 game to the Tigers.
But now it's like, they win a game. It feels like.
Now we're going, Hunter Brown is pretty good, guys.
You don't think that we're that far? You don't think that we're that close to where fans' interest starts to really wane from this team? Because it does.
Not like that.
Not to that point.
There's
but.
Been too many good memories over the last 7 years for people to just completely check out, like for the entire fan base. But for, I think, a lot of casual baseball fans in a town that has a lot of transplants, this is going to be a frustrating conversation to hear on the radio, that's for sure. I mean, we're saying the same things, it feels like, every day at this point. And, I mean, you can keep on saying, well, I hope it gets better. But I think there's a certain point where people are like, yeah, why should I believe that they're going to turn this around with the way that these 2 months have gone and with these same things happening over and over again? If they're happening over and over again, then that's what they are.
Yeah, they're a 500 baseball team at best right now. And the part about it now is just it's the Jose Abreu thing. Like, it was like one of the first texts we got today. It was just they're 0-2 since Jose Abreu came back.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't help matters, is that they are playing better than they did in April. It's just they're, A, only playing a little bit better, and they dug such a big hole that you can't really tell how much progress is being made. And then once they did start making progress, they threw Jose Abreu back in the mix. And it's just, again, just I'm sure he's a great teammate. The guys seem to like him. I'm just saying vibes as far as watching the game in my living room, vibes are down when I have to watch Jose Abreu.
From the 832, it's interesting because it's a train wreck, hard to look away. I don't totally disagree. Like it's just like what's going to go wrong next for this team?
Yeah, there's like 5 different fires constantly going, going at all times.
And then like they kind of put them out and then they explode again.
Yeah, or there's a bigger fire that pops up and then you kind of look at that one and you try to put that one out and then it starts to go down. Jose Abreu gets sent to Florida. Mm-hmm. And then, Alex Bregman's on fire. No, the starting rotation is on fire. It's just, it's one after another.
All right. The negative views. Of the Nico Collins trade or contract. Paul and I both like it.
Like the negatives about the Astros. I was like, no. Oh, wait.
Did we just do that?
No. We just did that.
No. We're moving on. But there are people who don't like the Nico Collins trade. So I'm going to present these arguments to Paul. I don't agree with them. I want to hear where he would most agree and most disagrees. That's next year on Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
All right, Paul, not everyone thinks the Nico Collins contract is the best thing in the world. Now, you like it. I like it. Sean, do you like the Nico Collins contract?
Yes, I'm generally positive.
I don't think it's the best thing in the world, though.
It's a good contract.
It's a good contract, yes.
It's a good contract.
Do you think is the best thing in the world, Paul?
Oh, that's a good question.
It's between sex and cats.
I was going to say between Pendleton and Iowa Cantina.
Oh, those are two different things.
Two different things.
Okay. It's either sex or it's cats.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then
it's
the
not
highway
between
cantina,
sex and cats.
And then everything else. Pendleton whiskey and mybookie.ag.
I like my cat, but I put a lot in front of my cat. Mm-hmm. I know I've only had him for a week, but you're also not married. Don't have a kid. So I thought maybe Pendleton would
sneak its way up there.
In front of the cat. I thought there was a slight chance.
Okay. But Nico Collins, like, fourth, right?
Yeah, Nico's, it sounds like fifth.
It's the fourth best thing in the world, the Nico Collins 3-year extension.
But not everyone thinks it's a good deal. And so the first argument I heard, Paul, was that he just hasn't done enough to earn the deal. That because of the first 2 years with Davis Mills as his quarterback, that the year three jump shouldn't have been rewarded with a $24 million deal in the way it was. And the argument I've seen, I saw someone on the Twitch, I can't remember who said it earlier, they used Andre Johnson and his lack of quarterbacks and the success he still had in the NFL as kind of the argument against it. You can use DeAndre Hopkins as well, that he had great success in the NFL with below average, terrible quarterback play, just as bad as Davis Mills.
I don't know if they were just as bad as Davis Mills.
He was pretty bad.
Davis Mills, the amount of people that bought into him, I feel like you lost all your credibility altogether. The guy couldn't hit a pass to the sideline. And yeah, he has a cannon for an arm, but I mean, you can't even trust him to run a Hail Mary last year successfully against the Titans. It was weird, the amount of people that bought into it, and I get it. He had a couple of nice games in 2022 at the end of the year. I get it. Check that. Not even 2022. It's the end of 2021.
Yeah.
So I don't understand it, and I don't want to pile on him continuously, but I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was with DeAndre Hopkins?
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Fitzpatrick was in the NFL for a very long time.
Yeah.
Brian Hoyer was in the NFL for a very long time.
T.J. Yates had a long career.
T.J. Yates was one of the quarterbacks that you would compare more to Davis Mills,
yeah.
But T.J. Yates has a playoff victory. I mean, Davis Mills was pretty damn bad.
So you don't think that's a good argument to why the Nico Collins contract is not good because of his first 2 years were not... And the below average quarterback play is not a good excuse for him.
No, the guy's 6'4", can run by everybody, and can do things after the catch. And I feel like the people that are bringing up, hey, what he was year one and year two, I feel like you're completely ignoring that. If you're saying, well, what was he those 2 years? I don't know. Here's what he is now. Pretty glaringly obvious if you've watched football.
So the next one that I've seen is just the number on the contract, that it puts him at number 7. And I mentioned earlier how when you think about it this way, that T. Higgins, Ayuk, Jefferson, and Chase are probably all going to get paid within the next 10 months, that really by the time, you know, Nico's playing under this contract, he will not be a top 10 paid wide receiver in the NFL. You also have guys like Keenan Allen and Stephon Diggs who could get big short-term contracts, kind of like Nico's.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an issue? Do you think that the value of his contracts, you understand why there's pushback against that?
No, I don't get
it. I say no.
I really don't get any of the pushback to this. This is a very reasonable deal. They're not locked in forever. This does not prevent them from giving CJ Stroud all the money. The salary cap balloons every single year, and these contracts get bigger every single year. And I think we see the value number for these deals in totality. We don't think about what's actually going to be paid on these contracts, which sometimes are not even seen to the end. And we see that big number and say, well, I've never seen that before. Well, I've never seen that before. And yet you forget that you said that the last offseason and the offseason before that. If you're taking a look at the NFL as a whole, that to me is understandable, but it's not a valid defense. These contracts get bigger and bigger all the time. And there are, as you said earlier in the show, Joe, are some other wide receivers who are going to be paid a lot more than him.
Yeah.
Collins did not ask for more money than some of the deals that just got signed. They gave him a short-term deal that is worth less than some of the guys who signed this offseason, who I think most of us would argue, based off of what they've done in their careers to this point, are better receivers than Nico Collins. I'm not saying he's the number one in the NFL. He certainly has help from C.J. Stroud. He has help, hopefully, from Tank Dell. But I also saw what I saw at the end of the year, and I feel like if you are not seeing all the things that Collins brings to the table now, then you're not looking hard enough.
Yeah, it's I don't know why there would be a pushback to the contract that Nico Collins got. It's you can if you want to use the Davis Mills era, I don't agree with that. If you want to use like just where he belongs in this pantheon of wide receivers, well, statistically for 1 year he's in it. That's 1 year, but he's in that moment. A lot of times, to me, when I hear people push back against these contracts, what I really hear is all the other contracts they've seen in the past blow up in their face, and they just think every single one's going to be a disaster. That whether you want to, like, I heard the Beast talking about this yesterday. Like, they wrapped in the Jose Abreu contract and how everyone thought that was going to be good, and it blew up in the Astros' face.
Comparing it to a 37-year-old?
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. Like, if you want to use a contract that's not going to play out well, you can use Tytus Howard as the example. I thought Jeremy brought up a good point yesterday when talking about this as the news broke that Nico hasn't played in every single game. So, yeah, you are paying a player a prime salary who does not, you know, has yet to play a full season. That's okay. Like, it's not perfect, but how many players also play a full season at this point?
It's funny that they use that, given that he was top 10 in the majority of receiving categories mm-hmm. last year, despite having played less games than every player that was in the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
16 or 17, everybody else that was in that conversation, he was in 15. How many wide receivers had multiple 150-plus games? How many had multiple 190-plus games? How many in a playoff game, do or die, on a Saturday night in Indianapolis would have been able to have 9 catches for 195 yards and a touchdown, a 75-yarder to open up the game with pretty much no help around him at wide receiver? Nico Collins won the Texans that game mm-hmm. from the start, but also with huge catches throughout that game. And if you listen to me back then, I said that was the moment right there where I 100% began believing in Nico Collins as one of the better receivers in the league. Go back and watch that game. He's making tough catches in traffic while getting interfered with. He's running people over, and he's running by the entire defense on the first play of the game. He won in that game. And if you're pushing back, I think you're just looking for a reason to be a contrarian.
I don't necessarily disagree. Like,
and I get it. There's an art to that, but you don't always have to disagree.
Well, and part of it, see, I think the biggest pushback that I people to me have is more when they see the names around him in terms of highest paid wide receivers. When you see Tyreek Hill, and yes, Jefferson and Chase, and these guys are coming. You see Devontae Adams, Deebo Samuel, guys who have had long-term sustained success. And Nico just hasn't had that yet. And that, to me, is why if there was a pushback, that's the one I would look to. But to me, it's no different than C.J. Stroud. It's okay to just believe what's in front of you sometimes. It's okay to believe that after week 4, everyone was pretty much ready to acknowledge C.J. Stroud was a superstar franchise quarterback. And then by the end of the season, there is no question in most mind that he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, because we saw it with our eyes. Nico Collins, it's the same thing. You can push back all you want, but we saw how it played out. It's for some reason, there's a major pushback from fans, media, everywhere to crown people too early. And they're willing to kill people right away and crush them and say they're never going to be good. But when you have a player like Nico Collins, it's too early. Well, why? Why is it too early? Why is it okay to call C.J. Stroud a top 5 quarterback in the NFL after 10 weeks and not with Nico Collins say he's worthy of being a top 7 wide receiver? Like, this isn't Anthony Edwards conversation where they're trying to crown him as Michael Jordan. Like, no one here is saying Nico Collins is the next Randy Moss. We're saying he's deserving of – hey, I saw that look, Sean. Say it, Sean.
Let me pull up his 40 time real quick.
Give me a T.O. at least.
I know someone who is big and fast.
Jerry Rice.
He is 6'4" and can run past entire defense.
Oh, who's that remind me of?
Randy. Will Randy Moss and Tom Brady's record get broken this season by C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins?
Yes.
Maybe next year.
Extra game.
Maybe when Nico's not. Maybe when Stephon Diggs isn't on the team.
What'd you say?
Now we got our podcast title.
Nico and C.J. over Brady and Moss?
Next Moss and Brady?
It's funny to hold a quarterback against an elite wide receiver, too. Hey, the elite quarterback likes throwing to this wide receiver. I don't know. Maybe keep doing that.
Well, the goalpost on that conversation moves all the time. Because it just depends on how you like the quarterback, who is the reason why. Like Tua, no one ever gives him an ounce of credit for what Miami's offense has done. It's all Hill and Waddle. Now, part of that with Hill is that he had the success with Mahomes. But we didn't give all of Mahomes' success to Tyreek Hill, but we give all of Tua's success to Tyreek
Hill. But Mahomes and Stroud are like on 100% different planets. And
but like there are just different wide receivers and quarterbacks. It just depends on where you are. Like the B. Hannon, name I forgot to mention was CeeDee Lamb. He's also going to get a massive contract and push Nico Collins outside the top 10 of highest paid wide receivers in the NFL by the start of next year.
Yeah, getting this deal done early before when you're still at only one good year and you can go, well, you know, it's because of C.J. Stroud. He had that one good year. Guess whose quarterback's going to be for the next 3 years as long as this extension is? Mm-hmm. Barring a catastrophe, it's going to be C.J. Stroud.
Yep.
So that to me as a, well, you know, he's not one of the upper echelon wide receivers. He just plays like it because he gets to play with C.J. Stroud. Well, then great. Because C.J. Stroud's still on a cheap contract. You can pay him.
And this contract, I mean, God forbid C.J. Stroud ends up not on the Houston Texans at the end of his rookie deal, but this contract literally lines up with the entirety of C.J. Stroud's rookie deal. So say things hit the fan and we've got another Deshaun Watson 2.0 and you're moving on from the guy.
How dare you?
At the end of the deal, worst thing in the world happens. Guess what? His contract's off the books as well. But guess what? Some of these wide receivers that you know in name that you believe are so good were elevated by the guy that was throwing to them. And as Joe said, yeah, sometimes the other way around. It happens. Sometimes it's the wide receivers that elevate their play. But in an offseason where people were banging the drums for the Texans to go get Stephon Diggs before they even got him, we don't know that C.J. Stroud and Stephon Diggs are going to have a rapport. We do know that C.J. Stroud has a tremendous rapport with Nico Collins, as proven in that game against the Colts and in that game against the Cleveland Browns.
It was pretty good. It was a pretty good year. And I'm looking forward to this year, too. You think, if you had to take a guess, I'm going to ask you a big picture question. Does Tank get a contract close to this down the road?
I don't think so. Just a
gut feeling right now after a rookie year.
The gut feeling I have right now is that there are going to be injuries. And
yeah,
I think he has the talent to get paid that, but I'm curious. I mean, I remember another mid-round draft pick that the New England Patriots had that was honestly like the only good wide receiver that they had drafted in a really long time. And if you watch the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl right here in Houston, you saw him. But, and this is the sad thing, I'm forgetting his name already because injuries cut his career short before he could ever get things going.
Amendola?
Not Danny Amendola.
Chris Hogan?
Malcolm Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Yeah,
Malcolm Mitchell, now he wasn't as special as Tank Dell was his rookie year, but I remember in that game I was like, oh, the Patriots might have stumbled into another wide receiver because they're so bad at drafting him early on. And Mitchell's career, sadly, did not last that long. It's a shame. He really was, I thought, awesome in that game. But he had a knee injury the year afterwards, and that was it. Like, it was just his rookie season, essentially.
Yeah, just think about Tank Dell. I'm with you, Paul. If I was going to take a guess of where this is headed, he's probably at max a $14 million a year guy, even when he's eventually able to get paid. Because I think
keep going up. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess like 14.
That's 4 years from now, so that's 20.
$14 million before inflation.
Yeah. Well,
don't ask me to do that.
But the
who knows how much things are going to inflate?
He could be the Devontae Smith, because Devontae Smith is up there with the Nico Collins as far as
yeah, he got 25
as far as money goes. But There's Smith's also the chance. Pick, there's also the what's it?
Smith's a former first round pick and a Heisman winner, though. Yeah. So that's kind of.
But I'm just saying, like body wise, like if his body can hold up, he can be someone that you want to give an extension to. It's also when you come time to give Tank Dell an extension. That's also when it's going to be time for Will Anderson, C.J. Stroud, and Nico's going to need another deal. So there might be a little bit of a crunch there.
And Derek Stingley Jr. And Stingley. And Christian Harris will be up around. Like, all these contracts Juice are Scruggs, also going to kind of yeah. like, hey, come on. Okay.
What?
Juice Scruggs. Get out of here.
Kenyon Green. Got to pay all these guys.
It's Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So Brian Windhorst recently was doing a radio interview. And I found this very interesting to our Donovan Mitchell hopes here in Houston. He said, what Donovan has with the Cavs is what LeBron has with the Lakers. In fact, it might even be stronger. Donovan Mitchell really calling the shots like that on a team?
As far as pull within the organization?
That seems crazy.
I mean, he probably got bigger staff fired.
I like Donovan Mitchell. I don't want to disrespect Donovan Mitchell too much. Donovan Mitchell is not worthy of having that much control over a franchise.
Yeah, but it's Cleveland.
I think it's not just Donovan Mitchell. It's where Donovan Mitchell exists in time and place. Where it is the Cleveland Cavaliers trying to re-sign Donovan Mitchell. Just get his name on a piece of paper. Listen to him.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are not pretty. They are not the belle of the ball.
No, they are Mark Davis.
They are taking what they can get and holding on for dear life no matter how many times they get walked over while holding on.
What a transition. Speaking of getting walked over, Ty Lue just got a 5-year, $70 million contract. A lot of money. That's a lot of money for a coach.
That's a ton of money for
5 years, $70 million for the Clippers.
But hey, if anyone's going to get paid that kind of money, other than Monty Williams for some reason, it's going to be whoever is coaching the team that's owned by Steve Ballmer. Because that's with the coaching market, like there's no salary cap. You can pay him whatever you want. Just throw money at him until he says no.
It's a lot of money to give to a guy who's been very good at getting Kawhi Leonard to go to work.
It's not his fault. That might be the hardest job in the world.
It's not anyone's fault at this point. There have been some astronomical deals given out to coaches of late. Mm-hmm. What was the ridiculous one last offseason?
It was Monty Williams. He became the highest paid coach in NBA history.
Which is still.
And how many games did they win this year?
17?
It's like
it ends in a teen. I know that.
Well, I mean, he brought in a genius offensive coordinator. That's why he had such success this year.
A winning mentality.
Yeah, Steven Silas winning really going to help the Pistons. 14 wins.
14.
They won 14 games this year.
Steven Silas will help you have another chance to end up with the fifth pick in the NBA.
I know. That's the funniest part, is that the Pistons are trying to be good. And they cannot be good. And then they get the fifth pick in the draft. Like, they drop in the lottery order every single time.
Sean, you mentioned Mark Davis.
Yes.
So you were educating Paul and I before the show on a follow-up from this chick who got pregnant, but it's not Mark Davis's. Who's the baby daddy?
So the baby daddy, I believe this was – this is how I saw it. I don't know if they had it first. I want to be very careful with the journalism here. I believe TMZ had it first that Hayden Hopkins is not expecting a child with Raiders coach – or Raiders owner Mark Davis. She's expecting the child with MLB player Joey Gallo.
Mm.
In the statement, she referenced something about Joey, like this kid is not Mark Davis's, it's Joey and I's. And I think we talked about, oh man, just being Joey and being caught up in all this, being like, wow, the owner of the Raiders is who the public thinks is the father of my child. Actually, you're not a normal guy. You're a professional athlete, Joey Gallo.
Yeah, but professional athletes, you're not ashamed of having a child with a professional athlete, where having a child with a rich person in their 60s or 70s that looks like that, I mean, you would never want to admit that.
No, I just mean that as far as, like, when I heard just it's Joey and I imagine it was just some
other Joey.
Some other 28-year-old named Joey.
and I mean, I don't know.
That, like, she went to college with or something. It's, like, no, well, nope, it's Washington National.
Professional athlete, $5 million made this year. Congratulations. Ooh. He's hitting .138 this season. He sucks.
Yeah, but he's played baseball for 10 years.
He's also always a low batting average guy.
He's a home run guy.
Good point.
Yeah.
How many home runs does he have?
What's the highest batting average of Joey Gallo's career?
In his career. The highest batting average of Joey Gallo's career is .223?
No, I got .253 here.
Ah, got
it. His next highest?
Is that 2020? Asterisk?
No, 2019. So okay. He was probably cheating.
Man.
The next highest batting average for a season for his career was in 2017. He hit .209.
His career batting average is .195.
How?
We need to bring averages.
Okay,
back.
Okay. But what's his WAR, all right?
His OPS is .78. So that's
okay.
Pretty
that's good
considering that's he's good. Literally batting
below the
slightly
Mendoza
less
line.
Than twice as high as Jose Abreu.
Man, what a bad baseball player.
Jose Abreu has a lower batting average than Joey Gallo.
It's not good.
Junior
Bronco just said I'd take Gallo over Abreu.
Nearly period. Doubled. I think we all would, honestly.
First base, does he play good defense at first? Any Washington National fans can text in. Does Joey Gallo play good first
base defense?
I'm
sure there's just like thousands of those listening to the show right now. Okay, Yuli Gurriel over or Joey Gallo?
How old is Yuli Gurriel?
He's 40. I mean, we think.
You look at Joey Gallo's Pro Baseball Reference, and you would assume that he's in his mid 30s. He is 30 years old and 192 days.
Oh,
wow!
Good for him.
So he's still technically in his prime.
Texture we got off the last segment.
Procreating age.
Baby's
he's still
out.
Potent, is what you're
sounds like it.
I mean, he's only got 4 home runs this year, so the home run total is down.
Well, I don't know. I think the biggest home run of all is the child he's about to have.
Yeah, man.
Isn't that what life's all about?
Yeah, I think you got to like lock her down first, too. I mean, she does have room. Like, people, you know, are thinking it's Mark Davis's. So I don't know if that's a total win in your
no,
book.
She clarified that. And
even
I,
though
I
this story
it.
Is...
If you could have the baseball player money or the NFL owner money, what are you taking?
The
I
NFL
believe
NFL owner.
Yeah.
But a poor owner. Joey Gallo's
you're
career,
right.
Joey
right.
Gallo career earnings.
We know that among NFL owners, he's not making much. But one, does she know that? Two, would she care?
I would assume that Joey Gallo, about $35 million, it looks like.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought he would have made a lot more than that.
Manipulated his service time.
Yeah. I mean,
he
got paid. Almost, he got paid $1,075,000 just for 3 years combined. So
that's crazy. Text here from the last segment from the 832 is Tank Dell just a better version of Will Fuller?
Totally different players.
I also don't think the injuries are going to be that kind of injury.
Yeah, Fuller was a hammy injury guy.
Yeah, he had an acute injury where you can watch the play and be like, yeah, I get it. I get why his leg broke. Will Fuller was the hamstring, groin, like soft tissue injuries.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, and it was all the time. You need to put years in the game before you reach Will Fuller status.
Right, and different size. I mean, Will Fuller's 6'1". Tank Dell might be 5'8". It's two totally different players.
All right, when we get back, garbage time. How we wrap up every single show. That's next year in Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Well, I got good news if you're one of the few that doesn't like the Nico Collins contract. Because we got details. They can cut him after 2025, and they have $0 guaranteed on his salary. His dead cap is only $8.5 million in 2026, $4.25 million in 2027. This contract is wild for Nico Collins.
So if his leg gets decapitated or cut off or something like that.
Yeah.
Amputated is the word
amputated,
you're looking for.
My bad. Yeah. Decapitates the head.
That's when it's the top.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. if his leg just goes missing all of a sudden, then guess off. What? Texas can just kick him to the road. Yeah.
His cap number this year is $6.6 million. Next year, it'll be $18.3. So he got a little bit of a bump this year compared to what it originally was thought to be, just $3 million. Honestly, my bigger takeaway is he's going to sign a new contract after 2025. He'll just get another deal.
That's really how things are done these days, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
just hold out for a couple practices.
But I don't even know if he would necessarily have to do that because, I mean, if he plays well enough, the Texans will probably think to themselves, hey, you did good by us. We'll do good by you.
Yeah, that's kind of how they operate now.
Yeah, they're not quite – I mean, they're signing guys to extensions after trading for them before they even play a snap.
Mm-hmm.
So I – maybe Stephon Diggs the exception here, but rewarding Collins instead of Diggs, smart. And also – finding flexibility here, smart. And I'm imagining if there was no C.J. Stroud here and if there was no D'Amico Ryans here, that would have been a lot more difficult for Nick Caserio to pull off. So Caserio deserves credit, but the Texans' just dramatic overhaul over the last calendar year is also a reason that a deal like that can happen.
All right, let's get to garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So, I saw some unfortunate audio on the internet from play-by-play of a high school girls' soccer game.
Okay.
It took place in Oklahoma. While thinking he was off of a live stream of this high school women's soccer game. I guess it's a high school girls' soccer game. This man, who goes by the name... I'm looking for his name here. I'm surprised by how it is hidden as much as it does. But at halftime, this man just starts to vent. And here's what Toby Moore, the play-by-play man here, had to say.
God, was that first half as ugly as I thought it was? See, because it's a high school game, it's an announcer. I just can't get what in the hell was that? But, no, not college games I might. High school games I won't. It is beneath my dignity to call out high school players. I'll try to subtly do it, but I'm just going to say this game blows. My mind kind of flipped the kill-me-now switch at about 30 minutes in. If they're just going to keep kicking the damn ball out of bounds and missing passes all day, I might as well just go home. I just want to do a header off the top of the press box. Unfortunately, it's too low. It wouldn't kill me. It's like they're not even trying to pass. They're just chucking the ball downfield. A little technique would be nice. What the hell are they teaching those kids in practice?
So this is a game in Kansas between McPherson and Rose Hill High School. Now,
what a rant.
Far be it from me to defend the broadcasters here. All I'm going to say is anyone who has worked in this field has had at least one day where that has been going through your head, because not every single job in the world of sports media is glamorous and or fun. I will say specifically the time that I went to cover a Sugar Land Skeeters game sitting in the stuffy press box for Roger Clemens to throw like two innings.
I was going to say, was it Tracy or Roger?
With, in the middle of that game, everybody holding up Red Solo cups to have a party because I guess Toby Keith was there too, RIP.
Oh, nice. This is a bad memory?
I had to go to that instead of getting to cover a Houston Texans preseason game, which at the time was all I wanted to go to. This is when I was a lot more in love with sports. I know that I had similar thoughts there. So I'm not saying what he said was good, but he thought that that was not live over the air.
I've definitely run games here where I'm like, can it at least be a close game? If I'm going to have to be here all night on a Saturday night, can it at least be good?
Yeah, I was the Rockets radio producer for, let's see, the post-James Harden era.
Ooh.
Until I came here. And I don't know. All of that basketball sucked. Like when they're down 30
your
every
record,
night.
Your record is like 30 and I, 20, 200.
He's not getting canceled, right, for this?
Oh, he is 100% out. Well,
the only thing he said was they were going to take a header out of the press box.
Okay, look.
Everything else was very funny.
I guess he's ripping high school girls. I guess that's bad.
But it is bad.
Nothing he said was that out of line.
Yeah, like he was. It was pretty PC.
We're not done.
Oh.
First, though, I will say, Moore has been calling games since 2019. He calls games for Tulsa Athletic Soccer and Rogers State University in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He apologized in a statement to awful announcing. They were tasteless, stupid, and inexcusable. Did it get worse? Yes. Here is this commentary getting worse.
Up top, baby. Right there. Gotta be a little more like the one that's facing us. Yeah. See if she can tear the f*** off. I guess I can't see the legs, but I can feel the ad in here. We've been around long enough. We know what we're doing. All right. I think we got it all out of our system. We can put the mic live again. Let it rip.
Whoops, that last part. So he was talking about the soccer moms in the crowd.
Okay.
There was another person he was talking to. That person, not close enough to the microphone for anything to be
probably wasn't there. It was probably the producer.
Audible.
Probably the producer in the studio.
For those who don't know, the game was close. Rose Hill won the game 2-1 over McPherson.
Man.
Thank you. I feel worse about defending him, but at least he didn't get...
At least it was about the moms.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least he kept it to the moms.
Yeah.
But, okay.
It could have been so much worse.
You know what, next time, Joe, let's not defend a guy halfway through.
I didn't know there was another part of audio.
I did.
I love how Sean said, let's. I mean, let's. You were egging
him
on. You
could have stopped me.
That was a trap.
That's like a hot mic instant. That's my hot mic.
You know the mic is on.
You're just like, hey, Joe, just keep talking.
What else do you think, Joe?
Get a shovel.
This guy seems like a good guy, right? You're going to hire him, right, Joe?
Guys, we talked about the police officer and the Louisville Police Department who dropped the charges against Scottie Scheffler today. Well, this police officer might be worse than the Eric Cartman lookalike who pulled over Scottie Scheffler.
Okay.
A San Diego police officer has resigned after getting locked in the backseat of his police cruiser for over an hour with a woman he had arrested. He pulled her over due to a suspected car theft. On the way to police headquarters, the woman could be heard in the backseat telling Hare that she wanted to have sex. Woman, are you single? Hare, yeah, but you're not. Woman, I'm down to bleep right now. Hare then pulled down a residential street and turned his car and body cam off. After about 20 minutes, Hare called a fellow officer asking if he had a master key to open the back door of his police cruiser because he had locked himself in. The officer arrived and opened the back door, finding Hare with the woman in the back seat. Throughout the investigation, Hare claims he was just checking on the woman and claimed the door accidentally locked behind him. The police department, however, found traces of semen on his belt. He later resigned.
So you said it was 20 minutes after?
20 minutes later.
How hard do you think he tried to unlock the... How much time do you think was spent trying to unlock the door?
I bet he tried to kick open the window.
Yeah. I'm sure the AC was on.
That's got to be a tough one to call in.
I think you got to stick that out until you find a way out.
How are you going to find a way out?
You can't break... Yeah.
It's a cop car. They're designed to not be broken.
I guess I assume he left his gun in the front seat. Shot out the window.
You know that cop that...
Way to do way more paperwork.
That cop that had previous incidents before his back and forth with Scottie Scheffler, the Eric Cartman lookalike guy, whose name is eluding me right now, that guy might have shot out the window.
Yeah.
And he also might have stayed on the force.
Man. We got some great cops in this country. Idiot. All right, that does it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow. The Killer Bees with Brian, Joel, and Jeremy is up next. Goodbye.
Peace.